Welcome to the official Jets podcast. Eric Allen here at One Jets Drive. I'm joined by Lejay Duzable. Not only today, but we are going to do this a number of times leading up to the draft. I think four in all, Duz. So get comfortable, brother. We got a lot of things to talk about.
I love it, EA. Can't wait to dive into this draft with you and see how it affects the Jets. I know a lot of great topics today. I believe, had a big signing on the show earlier, if I'm not mistaken.
Big signing. Mike Williams was just in the studio. He's actually leaving One Jets Drive here. A second ago, I saw him walking down the stairs, so he's awfully excited to be here. And in fact, just to give people some background, what's going on at the facility, there's a lot of Taylor ham, egg, and cheese sandwiches that have been delivered here today. How about that?
Sure. I mean, once NYJ Matt sent that sandwich and it went viral, and that was the closing factor, determining factor in Mike Williams signing, you knew the rest of Jet Nation was going to come out in droves and send nothing but breakfast sandwiches to One Jets Drive just to make sure Mike Williams has a taste of every good Taylor ham and egg and cheese sandwich.
Yo, I got to watch my weight, so I don't know how many of those I can eat, dudes. But let's get to that right now. Again, we're going to be focused primarily on the draft, but on today's installment of the Official Jets Podcast, I want to talk about what the Jets have done so far this offseason and how that's going to impact Joe Douglas and his staff as they approach the 2024 NFL Draft. So, Mike Williams, what did you think about that addition?
Big signing. If you would have told me going into free agency that, you know, we could couple Tyron Smith in this scenario as well, but that Joe D would sign Tyron Smith and Mike Williams, I would have thought there would have been a lot more money allocated to those two players in regards to getting that deal done. So shout out to Joe D. When you look at the Tyron Smith deal, essentially a 1 year, $6.5 million deal, heavily incentive based from one of the top offensive tackles when healthy on the field. And then you look at Mike Williams, right? The Jets needed somebody that could take pressure off Garrett Wilson. And Mike Williams is that guy when the quarterback needs help, the big frame of, you know, 6'6", 200 up to 10 pounds. He's a guy that can go up and get it. And the good thing about him, EA, even though he's had some injury issues the last couple of years, but if you look at his last 2 years span, he's only had one drop, right, which plagued the Jets last year. So you talk about a guy that, again, when you're in trouble as a quarterback, he's a true X receiver, the big boy, big body receiver that can go up and be physical and get the ball. And then you talk about the red zone presence, right? EA, a guy that, when in doubt, if he's one-on-one on the island, we've seen Aaron Rodgers already do this in preseason with Garrett Wilson, check the play and throw that fade. Well, instead of it being a 50-50 jump ball for Mike Williams, it's more like 70-30, 60-40. He's coming down with the football. So I thought this was a massive get, not only for the Jets offense, but for the development of Garrett Wilson, because we know the type of player he can be and the potential he has. He saw a lot of double coverage. It's going to be hard to do that with a guy like Mike Williams on the other side.
So Mike Williams in with the Chargers, twice an 1,000-yard receiver. Yep. His yards per catch really off the charts. In terms of comparing him to other receivers in the NFL. And you're right about the contested catches. He's a guy who will go up and get it one-on-one. Yep. He isn't covered. So with all that being said, he's going to have to continue rehabbing, we imagine. Suffered that ACL injury in week 3 last year. Why is he such a good compliment? You touched upon it a little bit, but why specifically such a good compliment for Garrett Wilson in terms of what the Jets can do formation-wise?
Yeah, because with Garrett Wilson, you can line him up at all three receiver positions, right? X, Z, and in the slot. And the way that they started using Garrett Wilson more last year was they were motioning him, right? When you do that, you can kind of roll and see where coverage is rolling to. But when you have a big X receiver on the outside, that safety has to respect that, right? He can't just go where Garrett Wilson is at. So now it's going to free up the middle of the field a lot more for Garrett Wilson, which we know that's where he does a lot of his damage, EA. We saw it going back 2 years ago when he caught that in-breaking route versus Chicago Bears and then cut back against that defense for like a 50-plus yard touchdown. Like, that's what Garrett Wilson does really well and better than a lot of receivers, really attack the middle of the field. So now when you have that big receiver on the outside, that safety has to hold just a little bit, EA, because if he goes right where Garrett Wilson is right away, the quarterback has that option just to throw it up to that monster, Mike Williams. And you talked about him coming down with contested catches, one of the best in the NFL. You also alluded to his yards per catch. A lot of that is because he goes up on those 50-50 jump balls and gets 40-yard or 50-yard bombs down the field because he uses his body almost like a power forward in basketball, being able to box out smaller corners and go high point the football. So that's all I said. It's not just big for this offense. I think it's pivotal for Garrett Wilson's development as well, because now it'll be hard to roll coverage to him, because if you do that, there's going to be five or six times where Aaron Rodgers could just throw the ball up to Mike Williams. And again, with his frame and his body size, there's a good chance he's coming down with the football.
Yeah, really exceptional first down conversion rate. And the thing about Williams is he's not catching the ball really close to the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's catching the ball down the field. Yeah, and you pair him up, ideally, with one of the best vertical passers we've ever seen in the National Football League in Aaron Rodgers, and you're just opening things up for everybody on offense. Do you think right now Joe Douglas says, free agency, I'm good at receiver at this point. I signed the big fish in Mike Williams. I have Garrett Wilson. Alan Lazard's still on the roster. We saw some steps from Xavier Gibson and Jason Brownlee last year.
No, I can see him still going out there. I think Joe Douglas has done a really good job of letting the market come to him and not reaching and over, quote unquote, overpaying players, right? We saw the receiver market not take off like it has in past years. And that's because the NFL draft is laden with so much talent at the receiver position. EA, I was just saying this yesterday, the NFL draft kind of dictates how the NFL moves. And that's even including free agency. People were saying that the running back value in the market was dead, right? Because of positional value. But we saw, because the NFL draft doesn't have a strong running back class, running backs get top market in free agency this past year. Adversely, it's been opposite for the receivers, right? Besides Calvin Ridley, you could maybe even throw Mike Evans in there. The receivers that are normally number twos who get paid like number ones in free agency because they hit the open market, that didn't happen this offseason. And it's because the NFL draft receiver class is so strong. So, you know, there's guys like Tyler Boyd that are still out there. There's some good receivers that are still out there where I think Joe Douglas could even take a 1 or 2 year filler on some of these guys just to make sure the Jets have all the depth necessary just in case somebody does go down. But the great thing that Joe Douglas has done is really kind of fix a lot of the holes going into free agency. That way the book opens up for them at the number 10 pick. You know, Joe Douglas can go so many ways. And we talked about Garrett Wilson, and I'll throw it back to you, EA. But to me, this helps Breece Hall more than anybody with the Mike Williams signing, right? We talked about safeties not being able to lean towards Garrett Wilson. Well, you're not going to be able to keep that guy, that extra guy in the box as well, because if you get man-on-man coverage, we talked about Aaron Rodgers and the freedom he has at the line of scrimmage. You don't believe he's going to throw that up to Mike Williams if he sees him in man coverage for sure on the island? So that keeps that extra safety out of the box, which will open up running lanes for Breece Hall. So to me, he's the biggest winner. Yes, it's going to help Garrett Wilson, but to me, Breece Hall is the biggest winner with this Mike Williams signing.
I like that. Okay, so we are taping Wednesday morning. There are reports right now that Ohio State standout receiver Marvin Harrison is not working out at Ohio State's pro day. We know he chose not to work out in Indianapolis at the combine as well. I'm bringing up Harrison because prior to the signing of Mike Williams, NFL media draft expert Daniel Jeremiah had an interesting scenario that he proposed on his podcast with Bucky Brooks. Let's take a listen right now.
And the phone just rang, and it's Joe Ortiz, one of his best friends, and Joe Douglas from the New York Jets, worked together for 20 years, and he's all in. Joe Douglas has signed 33-year-old Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, older tackle on the other side. They went out and got John Simpson to play guard. Now, you can say maybe this is a house of cards with the age of these offensive linemen, but this is a 40-year-old quarterback. They are all in to win one in the next 2 years. So why not be bold? And do you think that they would have any issues parting with next year's second-round pick, which would be the cost? So you go from 10 to 5 as the Jets. You trade next year's second-round pick. They don't have a second-round pick this year because that was Rodgers' deal. And the Jets go up and they pair their wide receiver, Garrett Wilson, with his former teammate and Marvin Harrison Jr. with the fifth pick.
Okay, Deuce. So DJ says the Jets move up to number five. The Chargers move back because they're starting under Jim Harbaugh, the new coach there, and they want to address the line of scrimmage, and obviously they'll probably get an offensive lineman at 10. But the Jets go up all the way to five and take Marvin Harrison. Do you consider that now that Williams is here with the green and white?
I love my guy DJ. Just out throwing out chaos on a random Tuesday in the NFL during, you know, college basketball season when it's March Madness. This is my thing. I don't know if the Chargers take that deal first and foremost. You're talking about not even getting draft capital for this year. It would be the following year, and they're moving back five spots. So I don't even know if the Chargers would take that call, even though Joe Douglas does have a good relationship with their GM. And to me, after signing Mike Williams and how deep this receiver class is, I don't think it makes sense. You know my affinity for Rome Odunze. I honestly think he's going to be the best receiver when it's said and done out of the top three guys when you talk about Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Rome Odunze. So to me, if you're Joe Douglas, you stay pat. I think if anything, this is what Joe Douglas has done in free agency has allowed this team the flexibility to take calls to potentially move back and get a second round pick for this year's draft. So to me, I wouldn't consider doing it because I just think as far as the skill set between Malik Nabers, to me, who is the best stop and go receiver as far as getting up to acceleration and probably the most explosive out of the three, Marvin Harrison is probably the most complete. And to me, Rome Odunze is the best 50-50 contested guy who has a pro mindset already, and he's a game breaker as well. I don't think you need to move up and give up future draft capital, especially a second-round pick to move up when these guys are so close and talent-wise. I think Rome Odunze, again, will be the best when it's all said and done. You could potentially get him at 10, depending on way the draft falls. Hopefully it falls in your favor.
Real quickly, you're taking Harrison basically off the board for the Jets, which I totally get, unless he was there at 10. with that being said, do you think he'll slip at all, or you think he's going to be fine?
Yeah, I don't think he slips at all. The crazy thing is, EA, people always put a precipice on tape. So now it's time for GMs and scouts and coaches to stand behind that, right? If the tape is the thing that really matters, then why do I need to work out? I'm preparing
there
for the
go,
NFL.
Deuce.
Why do I need to work out? Like, okay. Literally, as the kids say, EA, stand on business. If it's about the tape, stand on business.
Speaking of business, the Jets started this offseason with multiple needs. Offensive line, tackle and guard, wide receiver, backup quarterback. You might even want to say running back after Breece Hall, your bell cow, you got Israel Abanaconda. Defensively, some questions at defensive tackle as far as those guys who had expiring contracts. And then safety, also now we can, I think, add edge into the equation. Let's go one by one what Joe Douglas and his personnel staff has done here in free agency. How do you think potentially it impacts the Jets in the draft? They have eight selections starting with number 10 overall. Offensive line, left guard John Simpson comes in from the Baltimore Ravens. Right tackle Morgan Moses, who most recently, of course, played with the Ravens, but is a former Jet. He'll come over, pencil him in at right tackle. And then big Tyron Smith, an 8-time Pro Bowler, a 2-time first team All-Pro, a 3-time second team All-Pro. What do you think about how Joe is gone and addressed the offensive line?
Yeah, let's start in the trenches. You know that's where I want to start anyway, EA. When you look at this offensive line, I think he's done a masterful job. Again, not overshooting the market, letting the market come to him. John Simpson, if you look at that deal, it was a lot lower than people originally thought it was when the original numbers came out. And you're talking about a guy that's a tone setter. I think that's what the New York Jets needed. Somebody that eats with their hands at lunch. That's what I call John Simpson. He's a guy that's going to eat with his hands. He's gonna wear that hard hat to work every day. And he's going to be the physical presence on that offensive line. And I think we saw what Breece Hall tweeted when, you know, John Simpson signed, and he was very excited. Also when Morgan Moses signed too, because Morgan Moses is one of the best run blocking right tackles in all of football. So now talk about getting a lot nastier on the offensive line. I think some of that was missing last year. You need some offensive linemen that want to take the heads off of the guy and the opponent in front of them, and guys that finish throughout the echo of the whistle. And that's exactly what John Simpson does. And then you talk about Tyron Smith. We talked about all the accolades that he had, EA. The biggest thing with him has always been health. Can he stay healthy? He's missed 30-plus games in the last 4 years. But just going back to last season, was a second-team All-Pro guy. So that lets you know the skill set he has when he's available. But that is the big question mark. Can he be available? And the thing is, with that contract that the Jets got him to sign, right, he has every motivation to be healthy, because a lot of it is tied to in-game playing, right? He has to be on the field to hit some of those incentives. So if you're Tyron Smith, you have all the motivation. Also, you get to play with Aaron Rodgers, and he talked about that as well, a guy that's kicked his butt in the playoffs a couple times. So, right, now you get to play with one of the best quarterbacks in our generation. So I think that was a motivation in itself for him to come over to the Jets. And he saw the young offensive weapons that the Jets have as well. So when you look at this offensive line, I think the biggest winner is Elijah Vera Tucker, because there was question marks. Yep. EA, where was he going to line up, right? People didn't know, was it going to be left tackle, right tackle, guard? To me, he's a Pro Bowl slash All-Pro type of guard, but he hasn't been able to solidify himself there because they've had to move him around because of injuries. Now they can solidify him at the guard position where he can get comfortable for the next few years and hopefully for the foreseeable future. And I also wonder, with that moving around, did that maybe have an I want to say an outlook, or maybe have some ramifications in regards to some of the injuries? Because again, when you're using different parts of your bodies, whether you line up on the right side or left side, your body gets used to one side. The other side is weaker, EA. So like when you have to get thrown into the fire on the other side, maybe some of that muscle memory isn't there, and that can lead to maybe some injuries. It'll be good for the young player, ascending player, to be locked into a guard spot. And we love what we saw from Joe Tippmann last year as a rookie. You would think in his second year, he's going to ascend and take another step solidified at the center position. So I love what Joe Douglas did as far as getting really good players, right? Not overshooting the market, because we saw a lot of guards get upwards to $15, $16, $17 million on the open market. I think Joe Douglas did a good job of letting the market come to him and solidifying the offensive line with good players.
Could tackle still be at top of mind for the Jets early in the draft? Right now, the first round selection, then they're scheduled to select again, of course, in round three, 8 picks overall, as we talked about. Morgan Moses, he's got 1 year remaining on his deal, and we know that Tyron Smith comes in, he gets a 1 year deal with a lot of incentives.
Yeah, so I think it's still on the top of Joe Douglas's mind. And if you know Joe D, he has affinity for trench play, right? And when I say trench play, that's offensive line and defensive line. And you stated it perfect, EA. When you look at your two starting tackles, they're both on one-year deals. So, like, good teams build for the future. Now, I think Carter Warren does need to be in that discussion as far as development and potentially taking over one of those spots in the near future. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have a void at the other tackle position, right? So when you look at this draft at the number 10 spot, I don't think signing Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses absolves the Jets from not taking an offensive tackle or a guy that's versatile, that can be a swing guy, that can play inside and outside. But it also gives the Jets the freedom, because they did bring in two starters, that they don't have to necessarily take a tackle, or it gives them the flexibility, like we talked about earlier, EA, to potentially move back and get some draft capital.
Speaking of freedom, you got freedom, more freedom at receiver, I would imagine, now with Williams coming back. Yeah. I know he's rehabbing, and we'll find out where he's at in his recovery in the coming weeks and months. But again, you got more numbers here, and I've been talking to you about this, dudes, for weeks and probably even months, that this receiver class, it's loaded at the top, but the depth really goes on for rounds here. This could be a historic class.
It really could. There's going to be guys that get taken in the late second, maybe even early third, that have first-round talent, And I don't just say that lightly. Like, there's literally guys, when you look at Ladd McConkey, who may sneak in late in the first. He's probably going to go in the second. He has first-round talent. Ricky Pearsall, a guy that's probably going to go in the third round from Florida. He potentially could have first-round talent as well. Javon Baker is another guy that's probably going to go third, fourth round, who has the potential to be a really good player as well at the receiver position. So it's really good depth. And maybe, you know, Joe Douglas is thinking about that at that number 10 spot when we talked about potentially trading back. Because to me, if you have one of the big three, and when I say the big three at receiver, Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., if one of those three fall at 10, I think it makes the most sense to go ahead and turn that card in right away. But maybe Joe D is like, this is a scenario where, because this is such a deep receiver class, that I could maybe trade back, hopefully get a high to mid second round pick, and even potentially take a really good receiver there that has first round talent. So you got to look at it from that perspective when you look at your board. And it all comes down to your top 150, what you have on your board as far as best player available. And that's another good thing that Joe Douglas did. He did such a good job in free agency. He could literally take the best player available at pick number 10 instead of having to reach for a specific position, right? If there's somebody that's there that he really likes that maybe graded out as a number 7 or 8 on their board, they can take them now, EA, because he's done a good job in free agency. So when you look at the signing of Mike Williams, again, I don't think that absolves the Jets from potentially taking a first-round receiver, because the same scenario, right? He's on a one-year deal, so you're going to have this issue again next year. But if you get a receiver in the draft, whether it's in the first round or you trade back and get one in the second round, you have him locked in with Garrett Wilson for at least the next 4 years. So I know Joe Douglas has to be thinking about that as he's going through this process.
Okay, so before we flip it over to the defensive side of the ball, real quickly, it's not April yet, but your thoughts on Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, because I know a lot of Jets fans after Williams put pen to paper said, hey, let's complete this thing with the offensive skill positions and go to him. Where are you with Bowers at this point?
10 is rich for me, EA. When you look at him, very explosive player. You turn on that Auburn film, he literally single-handedly beat that team, especially in the second half. A guy that is who is competitive at blocking, he's not a great blocker, but he will fit it up in there and get in front of somebody. But to me, we talked about positional value earlier. I think that's way too high for a tight end. It's rare that you see that. I mean, you saw it with, I think, Vernon Davis and Pitts, Kyle Pitts. I would say the Vernon Davis one has worked out, but the Kyle Pitts so far one, it really hasn't worked out. And then when you look at the Jets tight end room, EA, we've talked about this ad nauseum a lot this offseason. Like, I love our tight end room. When you talk about Tyler Conklin, I think Jeremy Rucker is going to get only better. I could foresee him being the future tight end of the future for the New York Jets, right? And then we talk about signing Kenny Yeboah back and Kuntz that they got last year in the draft is another draft pick that has developed really well as well. So you talk about a young group, you know, with Tyler Conklin, the veteran, and he's pretty young himself as well. So I really love the tight end room. Now, again, anytime you can add an, you know, explosive offensive weapon, it helps the quarterback, it helps the offense. But to me, 10's a little rich to take a tight end in this year's draft.
Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Lucky Fotu, young guy from the Arizona Cardinals. So he comes on board, a former rugby player. He's got an interesting background, a big guy. I don't think should be allowed to move that fast. but the Jets were very excited at getting him dues. Also, Javon Kinlaw, interesting backstory. Former first-round pick with the Niners. Battled some injuries there early. Coming off a year where he had his best season in the National Football League. And he also has the system familiarity and the person familiarity, because his defensive coordinator was Robert Saleh back in 2020 in year one. So that's big. And then Solomon Thomas, who had a career high 5 sacks last year, really good locker room guy. He also brings a monster motor on the field. I mean, Saleh's always, he just gives it for you out there on the field. maximum capacity. What do you think about the reshaped defensive tackle room as we head to the draft? Of course, Al Woods out there is a free agent. He unfortunately had the Achilles injury last year, only suited up for 6 games with the Jets. Fotu's a lot younger guy there. Quentin Jefferson lands in Cleveland. He had a career high in sacks last year, 6.5. But I'm sure Saleh looks at Kinlaw and says, hey, man, I got the upside. I know what I'm dealing with, and I can get the best out of him.
Yeah, so we were at the Senior Bowl. I know me and Ethan did an interview, and I was saying how important it was for the Jets to attack the D tackle position in the draft. Yeah. And everybody was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, we need offensive weapons. We need offensive line. And I stated it on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, EA. I said, you know, besides Quinton Williams, nobody is under contract in that defensive tackle room. I'm like, you know, somebody needs to play next to him, right? And there needs to be depth behind him. And there needs to be somebody that he can grow with. Because I actually had an interview with Ethan. And I said, Braden Fisk makes a lot of sense in the third round. At the time, he was a third round
pick. Oh, we're going to talk about Fisk in the future because I love him. You got me on Fisk, man. Yeah. That guy's an animal.
But to me, I don't think he makes it past the second round now. So, you know, they just don't currently have a second round pick. So I love what Robert Saleh and Joe D did. And I know a lot of people were kind of griping earlier in free agency because those were kind of some of the first signings was on the defensive side. And everybody's like, here we go again, right? The defensive side, this is a top five defense, championship defense. We need help on offense. But I'm like, well, for it to stay a championship defense, somebody needs to play next to Quinton Williams. So I love the signing of Javon Kinlaw. We'll break down, you know, Fotu and everybody else. But you talked about EA. I think the perfect word you said was upside, and that's why they signed him. He's a guy very familiar with the system, was the first-round pick with the 49ers when Robert Saleh was a D coordinator. And I think what people don't understand, when Javon Kinlaw got drafted to the 49ers and he was a high draft pick, people forget they just traded DeForest Buckner, who was a top two, maybe top three D tackle away from the Colts. So there was a lot of pressure on this kid to come in and essentially be DeForest Buckner, which that's a losing battle for anybody, right? That was an all-pro D tackle that they had just lost. They couldn't pay him and Eric Armstead, so they traded him away for a first-round pick and paid Eric Armstead instead. And that's Javon Kinlaw was stepping into those shoes. So, again, there was a lot of pressure. You talked about some of the injuries, but I thought he had his best year this past year, right, where all the pressure wasn't on him like it won't be for the Jets. A lot of pressure will be on Quinton Williams. He's going to take up a lot of the double teams. And you saw him be able to get after the quarterback. You saw the athleticism. And we talked about Tyron Smith being a mountain of a man. Javon Kinlaw's a mountain of a man as well. That's a big
human. I saw him walking the hallways here, man. He is so long.
That's
he
a big human so being. Long. That's a big human being. So you talk about a guy that had essentially signs a one-year proven deal, EA.
Yeah.
So you're going to get the best out of him because he's going to want to sign a long-term deal, whether it's with the Jets or somebody else in the future. So you're going to get a highly motivated Javon Kinlaw. And then, again, comfortable with the defense. He's not going to have to learn a whole new defense. We'll slide in nicely with Quinton Williams. Fotu was a guy, you talked about Al Woods. I think to me he's a younger version of Al Woods and probably a little bit more athletic, right? He's a guy that can push the pocket, but he's known for his run-stopping abilities, and that's what he'll do for the Jets. And then, Sally, you talked about it. I don't know what it is, EA. Well, I know what it is. It's the system. But every D tackle that comes into the system with Saleh ends up having a career year. We saw Sheldon Rankins do the same thing. He went and got paid, right? Quentin Jefferson, career year. He went and got paid 100 rounds. Saleh, I thought it was monumental to get him back, not only because of his play on the field, but what he means to that locker room and the guy he is off the field. You talk about a guy that just comes to work and does it right, EA. That is the definition of Solomon Thomas. Was my rookie at the 49ers, my last year in the NFL, couldn't be more prouder of the guy. Again, you talked about high motor, career high in sacks last year at 5 sacks. He's going to be able to give you some nickel rushes on third down, and he's going to be that motor on first and second down. He's going to fly to the ball. You see it on tape when you turn it on.
Outstanding human being, a human being, good football player. So defensive tackle heading into the draft, you got to feel pretty good. Maybe on day 3 if you want to address it, or what do you think?
I would not be surprised. Again, it all depends on what happens at pick 10. Is this a scenario where they take a guy or do they trade back and get some draft capital? Because if they do get some draft capital, I wouldn't mind taking a filler at a second or third round pick just because it's the same scenario, right? everybody's on 1 year deals. You'll be in the same scenario next year. It would be nice going into an offseason to know that you have at least two or three viable guys at a position instead of just throwing 1 year deals here and there. That's how good teams get that sustained success, because they're able to draft really well, right? Develop guys. They'll lose guys, get the compensatory picks back, but yet you still have some youth with veterans mixed in on your roster. So would not be surprised, depending on how the board actually falls, right? If there's a D tackle that maybe slips to the third round, that's not what's going to be in there in the second round. It makes a lot of sense for the Jets.
Shoot us straight, dudes, at the edge position.
Yeah.
The Jets have Jermaine Johnson, who looks like a star in the making. Huge second year. What a jump. You got John Franklin Myers, who is criminally underrated in my book. Just the guy sets the edge. He's got the low pad level. He's tough. And he collapses the pocket. He also can shift down inside, play defensive tackle for you. Will McDonald, the 15th overall selection in the draft last year. The Jets obviously hoping for big things from him. But Bryce Huff exits after a career year. What did you think about Huff signing with the Eagles and how that impacts the Jets at the edge position? I should say right now, reports are Jadeveon Clowney in the house for a visit. We'll have to see if anything comes of that.
Yeah, we'll start with Bryce Huff. Couldn't be more happier for the guy. You know me, anytime there's an undrafted free agent, I have affinity for him because I know that struggle. I was that struggle and I played 10 years. And for him to have signed a deal to get the most guaranteed money for an undrafted free agent in history, couldn't be more happier. Yeah, you know, when we were doing shows and I was up there in New York going back to 21, I highlighted him and John Franklin Myers before they are who they are now. Right. And I said, these are two guys that I think the Jets can build around, obviously with Quinnen Williams as well. But I'm just talking about specifically on the edge. I like these guys can be like foundational pieces for you. And people didn't know who they were, but I saw the film in 20 and I saw glimpses and highlights. John Franklin Myers, you talked about the grittiness that he plays with, right? He's kind of like the tone setter on that defense in regards to doing the gritty and dirty work. He sets the edge. He comes inside and rushes with Quinnen Williams on third down. He has the flexibility and versatility to play inside and outside. And when you talk about Bryce Huff, you know, our guy Baldy always calls him the Ferrari, right? Coming off the edge. That dude's get off is insane, right? And his bendability and flexibility to bend the edge with a 360-pound offensive lineman pushing on his hip and close to the quarterback is an elite trait that not many have. So, like, that's the thing that's tough about free agency. And when you have a top tier defense like you have, it's hard to pay everybody, right?
Yeah.
And it was a scenario where I knew most likely he was going to leave in free agency, was praying it could work out. But I knew most likely there was going to be a team that saw what I saw, right, in regards to what he does on film and how he can elevate a pass rush and a defense, period. And so glad and happy for him. Now, when you talk about replacing that, it's going to be hard to replace that, right? A guy had double-digit sacks last year. Now, if you're Joe Douglas and Saleh, you're hoping that Will McDonough takes that second-year leap like Jermaine did. Jermaine Johnson, you know, my infinity with Jermaine, I would have took him in the top five 2 years ago in that draft.
You were calling him out in Mobile. You were first on it, I think, after the first practice.
I would have took him top five 2 years ago in that draft. But he showed you why last year. You know, end up being a Pro Bowl guy, went to the Pro Bowl last year. And it's not just what he does in pass rushing. It's the attitude he plays with in the run game. Like, he's a physical, real physical guy, right? And gets out there. And he plays hard. He plays with a motor. So you would hope that Will Anderson takes that leap. There's rumors that they're supposed to be working out together. So hopefully some of the stuff that, you know, that Jermaine learned in his first 2 years will rub off on Will as well. But like you said, there is rumors that a potential number one overall pick is visiting the New York Jets, coming off a career year himself with 9.5 sacks. And the thing is, he kind of reminds me a lot of Jermaine in the way they play the run, right? They're both physical guys against the run, right? And they use that physicality when pass rushing. So great job by the Ravens signing him last year, and great job by him really honing in on that opportunity and maximizing it and having a career year going into free agency. But that would be a big signing. I think the Jets do need to add one more piece on the edge.
if no Clowney, maybe they do dip into free agency and get a lower tier free agent.
Yeah.
But could you see another edge possibly early? And don't worry, Jets fans. I'm not saying 10. Jets
oh, yeah, they're coming after you, EA.
Jets are not taking an edge. I'm going to say it right now. I will run to the city and back if the Jets take an edge in the first round.
You might have to. Because what? Let's say in this scenario, let's just play this game, EA.
Okay,
in this scenario,
let's do it.
The top three receivers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Say Joe Alt, Olufoshana are gone. Mm. We know that Joe D has an affinity for Talese Fuaga and he has versatility. But say you're at the number 10 pick and Jared Verse or Dallas Turner are like your number 5 player on the board.
Ooh.
And yet you get a call, but it's not worth you picking it up to trade back.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's always a chance. People want to talk about best player available, but on the Jets board, Dallas Turner could be the number 5 player on the board. So it's like, if he falls, I know it would be a riot on X or Twitter, yeah, whatever you want to call it, in the streets of New Jersey. It would be a riot in New York. But I'm just saying, you have to think about this hypothetically, because Top three receivers could be gone, and the top two offensive tackles could be gone by 10.
Right. Okay. I'm going to say it's extremely unlikely. Let's go to the
position. It's extremely unlikely. But just, I don't think a lot of people saw Will McDonald going 15 last year. So.
No, that's true. That's true. Okay. So we'll, go back to Will McDonald. I mean, go back to the safety position. We're talking about the edges. It's in my head.
Yeah.
Jets enter free agency with 3 unrestricted guys. They re-sign Chuck Clark. He doesn't even hit the market.
Yeah.
So he becomes your strong. You got your free safety and Tony Adams. Right now, Ashton Davis is still on the market.
Interesting,
he
right?
was a valuable piece. Had 6 takeaways last year. Also served a valuable role, or had a critical role on special teams, I should say. And then Jordan Whitehead goes back to Tampa. Your thoughts on the safety position, big picture, as we head towards the draft?
Yeah, I love the Chuck Clark signing him back. He was slated to be a starter for us last year, then ends up going down. You think Tony Adams, his second year as a starter, would take a significant step as well. Hate losing Jordan Whitehead. We saw at times him take over games, especially that Buffalo Bills game, right? The guy caught everything that was in his vicinity. He's always been a really good guy in the box tackling as well. The Ashton Davis one is interesting, right? Because I thought that was something that they should do business with. And again, this could be Joe Douglas just letting the market come to him. But I was a little nervous. I know Justin Simmons' name is still out there. He would be a big boost, right? But it depends on what he is going to want in free agency and what the Jets are willing to pay him as well. You're talking about a perennial all-pro, not just perennial pro bowler, all-pro.
You think for a guy like Simmons, like right there, he's looking for multiple years? He's not going in with the one-year.
Yeah, I mean, even though he's a little older now, I think he still wants at minimum a 2-year deal.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're him, like, you've earned that right by your play. The thing is, right, it comes down to positional value, and the safeties have had to learn that this offseason now. Like Xavier McKinney got paid top dollar in the market, but a lot of safeties didn't. I think a lot of guys were still getting around $9 or $10 million. McKinney was like the one caveat to that. He's right under, if I believe,
Man, I thought that was interesting that Poyer went to Miami for like 1 year, $2 million or something.
Yeah. Oh, you got to think he's older safety now, yep, in his mid 30s. So, and EA, I know him personally. He lives down here, so it just makes a lot of sense.
Keep one house
in the off season. Don't have to have 2 different houses. So it just made a lot of sense for him to be there. And obviously being in that division for all these years in Buffalo, they know him really well in Miami. So, yeah, I was talking about the safety market. Like, this isn't a strong safety class either. So, a little bit surprised, but not surprised, because there were so many safeties all of a sudden that hit the market because so many guys got released at the last minute, EA. So, I think that determined the market, where before, when I was talking in the show, the NFL draft kind of dictates how the market does with free agency. Well, when there's an abundance of talent on the open market, right, that can dictate and hurt your market as well. So I think a lot of safeties saw that affect their market this offseason, because Cam Curl was another guy that I thought he was going to get upwards of 10, 11 mil and he just didn't get that money. He's a really good player as well. So I think the Ashton Davis one makes a lot of sense. I know there was talks that he maybe wants to go somewhere where he could potentially start. Well, I think there's an opportunity with the New York Jets for him to compete and potentially start. And we know for a fact that Robert Saleh and also Coach Ulbrich like using three safety sets on defense.
Yep.
He could be a guy that comes in on that. And he did that for the Jets last year. So I would not be surprised if he ends up coming back to the Jets. I think it makes a lot of sense.
All right, we got about 1 minute left. Summation. This is our first NFL draft podcast. Where are the New York Jets at this point about a month prior to the 2024 NFL draft?
I would say they're in a really good spot, EA, because there was a lot of question marks going into the offseason and free agency, and people were wondering how many questions would be answered via free agency before heading into the draft. And Joe Douglas answered almost all of them. Now, again, would not be surprised to see them add another receiver, maybe even an offensive line, because just knowing Joe Douglas and all the darts that he's thrown at the dart wheel in regards to having great depth, it's come back to even hurt him. So maybe he's cautious and like, yo, I need to sign another offensive lineman, even if we draft one or two, just so I have the depth, right? I know that the depth is there. You would think that they would most likely sign another safety before heading in the draft just because they don't have the abundance of picks like a lot of teams have unless they decide to trade back. But I think they're in a really good position just because instead of maybe drafting for necessary need right away, they can draft for depth and they can get best player available at number 10. But when you look at the rest of the draft, instead of like your third round pick being somebody that you need to depend on right away, it could be a depth pick now because he's done such a good job in free agency. Now, again, there's a caveat to that. I think he still needs to sign maybe one more receiver, another safety as well. Then I'd feel a lot more comfortable saying, all right, for the rest of the draft, now we can build on sustained success. Let's build and develop guys that are the best player at their position when we pick, right, instead of just drafting for necessary need.
Enjoyed it, Leger, and we'll save a breakfast sandwich for you.
Oh, please do, man. I don't eat ham, though. Can it be like turkey bacon?
Sure, we'll get that, though.
I like that.